Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Good Life. I hope you just joined us. I didn't tell you a whole lot other than what's coming up. On the phone with me now, we're hoping, is Bianca Bosker. Bianca, are you there? Well, I was getting worried, Bianca, that with my screw-up and in my mind, having my website updated with all your information on it 2 weeks ago. My date was a little off, but I've been traveling a lot, and I'm old, and I drink a lot of wine. How are you? Now, I wish we were really spending it together, even in cold and windy New York. Good. Yeah. Good deal. First off, we're going to talk about you, but congratulations. The book's really cool. It's a fun, easy read, and even if you're not that much of a wino, you'll like it. But if you are a wino, it's so fun. Some of the technical stuff, even though you include the subtle highlights to get people past the technical stuff that may not be so technical, are really cool. We'll talk about that. But let's talk about you. You're a techno writer. You are not associated with the wine business, and you get bit by the bug. What up?
Yeah. So it's true. I was, when I started this, in no way a wine connoisseur. I knew there was a difference between wines from a bottle and a box, but I wasn't entirely sure what that was. And that wasn't something that bothered me until I discovered this world of cork dorks. And as you may already have mentioned, cork dork isn't just the name of my book. It's the wine industry's nickname for the most passionate, obsessive, and knowledgeable wine lovers among them. And I was really surprised because, you know, I think of wine as this thing of pleasure. And these cork dorks turn it into something approaching, you know, sheer god-awful pain. They compete in these high-stakes competitions that are basically the Westminster dog show with booze. They lick rocks to train their palates. They divorce their spouses to spend more time studying. They hire voice coaches, you know, memory coaches, take dance lessons to learn how to move more gracefully across the floor. And I didn't get it. You know, I just didn't understand what was the big deal about wine. Why would otherwise rational people spend all this time and money on something that at the end of the day turns into expensive pee? And what was I missing? You know, I was at that point, yeah, I'd spent 5 years as the executive tech editor for an online website. And there was something about this physical pleasure that people brought to wine. It was about taste and smell and these forgotten senses and picking up stories in the glass. And I didn't know if it was all BS or if I was just missing out on one of life's big pleasures. And so, long story short, I decided to quit my job and, against the advice of all those that love me, started drinking very heavily in an attempt to become a sommelier.
Wow. Against the advice of all who love you. You know, I mentioned while we were getting hooked up, and sorry for the painful delay, if you spend time in this environment, not at a restaurant with sommeliers, that's the fun part. When you're at the table as a civilian, if you go about this the right way, you don't have to be a PX, you know, you don't have to be someone who's going to drop $1,000 on wine the first go around. But you can learn so much, and you can try different wines that meet your budget just by being open, honest, and frank. When you sit with that same sommelier in a social environment or in a tasting group, suddenly you're, over a very short period of time, you look at wine differently. And I know that that had to be one of the things that you took from your many tasting groups that you got into initially. You know, it just it changes your whole outlook on wine.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I would say, you know, when it comes to the interaction of a guest with a sommelier, first of all, I think that a lot of us, I mean, I was kind of guilty of this at first, but we look at sommeliers as like, you know, waiters with this fancy French name. There's just the judgy undertakers, the restaurant world. And I think a lot of people see them as, you know, serving no real function besides guilting you into spending money on wine. And, you know, chefs are the kind of sexy bad boys of the restaurant world. They have knives and they work with fire. And sommeliers are these sort of kindly nerds. And I think that we're, that's a way overly simplistic way of looking at it. I mean, these are, I think sommeliers more than chefs deal in a very different, kind of more nuanced form of tension. They're almost like the ballerinas or Olympic gymnasts of the restaurant world, where it looks easy because it's supposed to, right? The whole point is for it to be elegant. I mean, to, you know, I mean, they're using 17 steps to properly pour a glass of wine. There's rules about the way they should walk around the tables, how their hands should be positioned, the word choice, how they smile. And so there's this whole kind of underappreciated art and science to it. What I will say, though, is, you know, to your point, I think when a lot of people go out to eat, dealing with the sommelier and picking out a wine is stressful. And I think a lot of us have this idea that it's sort of like when you're handed the wine list, it's like a multiple choice test. And somehow you have to pick the right answer on your own before the sommelier gets back to you to ask what you want. And it's all wrapped up in, you know, issues of money and how much you want to spend. You don't want to feel cheap. You don't want to be extravagant. And what I found remarkable is, you know, I spent a lot of time training and hanging out with and getting hazed by very high-level aspiring master sommeliers. And what I found is when they went out to eat, they or when they picked wines at a store, they really only needed to give two pieces of information. And that was, one, what flavors do you want? And two, what do you want to spend? And the, you know, the second one is easy. You shouldn't be ashamed. Everyone has a budget. It's better to be frank. And then the second one, you know, what flavors do you want? Well, that could be as specific as saying, you know, I like Austrian Rieslings, or as vague as I like wines that smell like grass. And a good somm will be able to point you in the right direction. So it is, I think part of it is, you know, I hope that the book and my journey can be empowering for people, because wine too often, I think, is intimidating.
Well, you know, and you're right, but you know from both sides of the table here, folks are intimidated. But to me, there's nothing better. Whether you go to buy a bottle of wine in a wine store or you're sitting there with the wine list, a good sommelier or a good wine merchant's going to ask you, so what have you been drinking? What do you like? What are you know? Are you want to experiment? You want to try something different? You know, and that's the fun part. The tasting groups
absolutely.
That you did. You went really, you jumped in with both feet and your hair on fire.
That's a great way of putting it. Yes. So part of learning, so I was really interested, you know, first and foremost in the sensory experience. You know, Plato and Aristotle decided early on that taste and smell don't matter. These are the base animalistic senses, and humans are bad at them anyway. And I think more than a lot of us realize, that perspective has really colored the way that we live our lives. And what's interesting about somms and what intrigued me is the way that, you know, I could stick my nose into a glass of wine and on a really good day tell you that I was smelling wine. They could stick their nose into a glass and tell you stories. And I wanted to learn how to do that. And so, yeah, I joined, you know, I belonged to, you know, two or three blind tasting groups at any given time. And I was waking up and sitting down to my first 6 to 12 glasses of wine by 10 a.m. most weekday mornings, desperately drunk by noon, but, you know, really trying to build up these senses. And what I will say is, you know, a big part of it is, yeah, I think not before you even have, like, memorize what grapes grow where, it's building up your sense memory, learning how to listen to your sense of smell. You know, I'm sure you hear people talk about smelling dirt in a glass of wine, which sounds ridiculous, but, you know, you'll never get dirt or strawberry in a glass of wine if you don't know what dirt or strawberry smell like. And so a lot of that training actually starts even before you sit down to a glass of wine. You know, smell everything, describe it. When I ride the subway these days here in New York, I'm constantly, with a little bit of risk, identifying the odors that I pick up on.
Yeah. When I was studying for and getting ready, the best $500 I spent was the 64-vial Sommelier Aroma Kit.
Yes, Linné Duvin.
Yeah, and, you know, I got about 80% first pass blind.
Wow.
And I was really happy. But then I've been teaching wine appreciation at WSU since 1999, so it wasn't my first attempt at smelling wine. And
wasn't your first smell rodeo.
That's right. And of course, I'm not shy, and I always have an opinion, even if it's wrong. But it's so fun to watch somebody, as you have seen both firsthand from your side and then other people, your friends, they don't want to say what they smell. You know, they're like, oh, well, I could be wrong. Well, there is no wrong. And that brings me to one of the coolest sections of the book. I think it starts around page 100. When you met, if I was really organized, I'd have the guy's name. And when you were in Europe at a smell-a-thon, a convention of people that do this for a living, and they talked about where some people have written off the human sense of smell as far inferior to, say, a dog, that it can be trained and it can be working. And tell the story about chocolate in a field and people on their knees.
A great lead-in. So yeah, I mean, again, I think that when you think about growing up, right, we learn, our parents tell us that the cow goes moo and the fire engine is red, right? We learn to identify colors and sounds, but really never smells. And I think that, you know, a lot of us kind of have this blind spot when it comes to it. But I was doing all of this drinking and tasting and doing horrible things to my liver, and I wanted to know, you know, could I actually train my sense of smell? And so I went off to Germany to this gathering of the top minds of sensory science and dissected brains and smelled weird things and sat in on lectures. And what the latest science shows is, first of all, that we're better smellers than we give ourselves credit for, and we can actually improve. And so, yeah, there's a fascinating study that's been shown that if you put a scent trail in the grass, humans can follow it much the same way hunting dogs will follow the smell of a bird or a rabbit. That's where the down on your knees, they got people like blindfolded them, put headphones on them, covered up everything, so they just had to follow the scent trail with their noses. And turns out humans might be pretty good hunting companions. But the second part about, you know, how we're actually better than we think we are. Yeah, I mean, we beat animals long considered the uber noses of the animal kingdom. Dogs, even with certain odors, rats when it comes to some smells. And I think that, again, it goes back to this bias that we tend to have. And by the way, it's hard. I mean, for people have such a hard time putting names to smells that scientists thought for a long time the human brain was just wired to prevent it. But in fact, we just don't have the right words. There's like hunter-gatherer societies that have specific smell words for the odor of a squished shrimp's blood after 3 days or stale urine after 48 hours. And, you know, again, a lot of it just comes from, as a master perfumer told me, describe the smell of everything you encounter in your day-to-day life. Your shampoo in the morning, the pepper you put into your food at night, and your mouthwash before you go to bed. And bit by bit, it'll start to open up. And there's this beauty all around us that I think, unfortunately, we're neglecting.
Well, you don't use it. If you don't use it, you lose it. And it's so funny, the odd descriptors. In my wine class this week, well, all of them, we talk about, you know, you've got to open your mind. The best sniffer and unbridled explanation of wine smells are kids. If you let them smell your wine, you know, they don't care whether they're right or wrong, and they'll just throw stuff out. I opened a bottle of King's Favor, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and we had that in, it was one of the 8 wines in class last week. And I said, okay, smell this. And some of the people in this class, it's a little more advanced class, have been in my other classes. And three or four of them took a deep sniff and go, oh, my God, you're right. It's cat pee. You know, and other people that were not as experienced would like, what, say what?
Well, what I think is fascinating, and I you know, did this research for the book is, you know, there's this idea of tasting notes, right, which are, you know, that sort of florid language that people use when they smell a wine. So when people sort of say, oh, it smells like cat pee and peppered black raspberry and potting soil, those are the tasting notes. And what I was so intrigued to find, these are so ingrained in wine culture. They've spread to coffee culture. There are chocolate tasting notes. There's, you know, marijuana tasting notes in places where weed is legal. And what I was shocked to discover is this is an old tasting notes are about as traditional as disco. I mean, this is something that was invented by sensory scientists at the University of California, Davis. And they, in some cases, you know, it is metaphor, right? And it's about learning to call cranberry what other people call cranberry. On the other hand, though, sometimes there is a scientific basis. So taking that New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, for example, we tend to say that it smells like, that wine smells like green bell pepper. And it turns out that green bell peppers, what makes them smell like that is a chemical called pyrazine, which is also in Sauvignon Blanc grapes. So it's not crazy. There is a bit of a chemical basis there.
Yeah, and not many people outside of some old producers in the Finger Lakes put flavoring in wine. So it's all natural stuff. I want you to stay. We're going to take a break, but there's so many things. Not going to be enough time. I want to have you on in the future, so we're going to book a date later. And I can't wait to see what your next book's going to be. And it needs to be a follow-on because the whole section on when you were working in restaurants and how that works, the behind the scenes of wine salesmanship. You know, it's,
oh boy, they're judging you more than you're judging them.
And because their job is to sell wine and make you happy at the same time. And I get it.
Absolutely.
But people just don't know. And it happens right here in Wichita. We don't have the kind of wine list you have there in New York, but boy, yeah. Stay with us. I tell you what, let's give the book away now. The book is called Cork Dork, A Wine-Fueled Adventure Among the Obsessive Sommeliers, Big Bottle Hunters, and Rogue Scientists Who Taught Me to Live Life, Live for Taste. Call now. The number is 316-869-1330. 316-869-1330. Caller number 5. Call now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.